Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
I just finished, and I mean just finished, a new speech that I'm going to be giving around the country over the next several months. I'm going to be in Denver, by the way, on Saturday, going to be speaking at the Secular Hub in Denver. I think they're pretty close to capacity. There may be a few spaces left. You can go to thethinkingatheist.com/events. I'm also giving the speech in St. Louis at Gateway to Reason. That's the weekend of July 28th. And I'll be doing it at the American Atheist National Convention. That's coming up in August. I love the fact they schedule the American Atheist Convention on the weekend of the solar eclipse. Not only will heathens gather en masse to celebrate their godlessness, but the sun will disappear. And they're having like a big occasion. We're all going to go out and witness the eclipse together. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm sure there'll be some news crews on site to watch the sun symbolically disappear and literally disappear or be hidden, covered up by the darkness in the wake of all of this heathenry. And some other tour stops on the way. I'll be in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm going to be part of, not speaking at, but part of the big Myth Information Conference in Milwaukee late September, and then Orlando, Florida coming up in the month of October. So a lot of stuff coming up, and I'm getting this speech together. It's amazing the relationship you have with creative material when you start it. You have this real enthusiasm and vigor and verve. It's like you're taking the first few steps of a marathon. You know, you are charged up, you're energized, you're ready to go, and halfway through, it's like you just have muscle fatigue. You in some ways feel like a stranger to the material. It's bizarre. The closer I get to the speech, the less I see it. And so by the time I'm 3/4 of the way through, and this happens with almost every piece of material I do, I'm like, this sucks. This is terrible. What am I thinking? Why did I start this? But I'm so time invested that I think, well, I'm going to finish it anyway. And then I get to the end and I'm like, well, you know what? Maybe it's not so bad. Maybe it's pretty good. And so I purposefully walk away. I take at least a day, if not more, and I don't look at it. And I come back to it and try to see it again with fresh eyes. And I will say that this speech, I need a title for it, but this speech I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think people are going to have a really good time. It, without spilling too many of the beans here, it addresses how freaky religious people, Christians in particular, get about the devil. We talk about the satanic panic, and we talk about just how freaky people get about Satan. And how rooted are these warnings about Satan in the facts, in the evidence, in reality? And there's a lot of humor, but there's also just a lot of real tragic stuff. I mean, I look around at people who are just, they're just crazy about Satan. I mean, Satan's everywhere. He's in everything. He lurks in the shadows. He's hiding in the bushes. He wants to come after us. He's going after our children. It's Satan. And this governs their lives. And many of us who were products of the satanic panic of the 80s, you know, the late 70s, 80s, and early 90s, man, those people were just nuts. And Satan was everywhere. Satan had infected everything. They just put us in bubble wrap and kept us in the basement to protect us from the wiles of the evil one. And so my speech is kind of a romp through all that stuff. I'm going to tour with it over the course of the summer and early fall. I'll probably publish it, and it will ultimately publish to YouTube sometime later on this year. So you'll have a chance to see it regardless, and I hope that you're going to enjoy it. Now, the radio show I'm doing next week, the podcast topic, is something that's really listener-driven. I know it's an issue, but I mean, there's an urgency to the correspondence I was getting, the request via email and social media from people who said, I am disabled, or I know someone who is disabled. I'm married to someone, or I have a child who's disabled. Have you done a broadcast about how religion and the church often preys on disabled people? And these people were desperate to share their stories. And so that's what next Tuesday's show is going to be about. I'm calling it Praying, P-R-A-Y-I-N-G, Praying on the Disabled. And we're going to talk about how the church often hyper-targets, sometimes with the best of intentions, they hyper-target people with disabilities. And then who knows what happens next. They either drag them up front and claim their healing and then make up an excuse when it doesn't work out. Or they say that in our weakness, Jesus can be strong and it's God's will that they're disabled, or who knows what narrative they attach to it. We're going to hear the stories of many people who have been, quote unquote, preyed on by religion in their own disability or the disability of someone they love. If you have a story along these lines that you would like to share, I'll get to as many as I can. The email is podcast@thethinkingatheist.com. And then a fun one coming up in 2 weeks, I'm doing a show called Seth Andrews Teaches Sunday School. And I'm going to format this in a way that's entertaining to listen to, and I'm going to share many of the stories written in the Bible that your Sunday school teachers and my Sunday school teachers never taught to small children. But imagine if they had. The weirdest shit in the Bible, some of the weirdest shit in the Bible, I'm going to format as a children's Bible story. And I'm going to do that broadcast in 2 weeks. And yes, I'm expecting some, you know, some vitriol and some pushback from believers. Look, it's not my book. I didn't write it. I didn't put that stuff in there. I'm just going to tell the story. Okay. That's coming up in 2 weeks. And if you have a favorite bizarre, you know, just crazy, offensive, just whatever Bible story that you would like to submit to be used, podcast@thethinkingatheist.com again is the email address. Okay. Well, today is, of course, the release date of this show is the July 4th Independence Day holiday here in the United States. I was thinking of just skipping the week, but I kind of figured you'd want something to listen to. And I also thought this was a compelling conversation. Here's the setup. I had an email a while back from someone named Sarah, and she is a very recent apostate. I mean, very recent. And, you know, I know the feeling when you've emerged from the faith and you look around and you're seeing the whole world differently, and you've got all these religious people around you, and you're terrified you're going to lose them or what's going to happen. And so she had sent an email along these lines, you know, kind of asking for some advice and wanting to kind of talk about it. And I asked Sarah, I said, you know, if you'd ever want to have a conversation, like let's hook up on Skype and let's talk for just a few about your story. If you'd ever want to share your journey, I think the listeners, many of the listeners would want to take that journey with you. And Sarah was all over it. Honestly think she was hungry, you know, hungry to be able to share her story in an environment where they're not going to pound her over the head with the Bible and tell her she's going to hell and warn about Satan and, you know, where she wouldn't face potential rejection, but where she could be around people who have her back and who will take the journey with her. And so she and I had a chance to chat for about 30 some minutes about, you know, her background, where she came from, how she got out, what she's going through. And I found that the story was something that was really touching. Occasionally, it's just heartbreaking and frustrating, and ultimately an inspiring story about a person who found her own voice and is now living her own life on her terms. So here on this first week of July, I would like to play for you my conversation with Sarah, who as of just a few short months ago, does not believe in God. Hi, Sarah. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
Sarah, you had sent me a message that talked about some of the challenges that you're having with your family and your personal situation. Do you now identify as a religious person or an atheist, or do you know?
I would say atheist, definitely.
But you come from religion.
I sure do.
Okay. What does that mean? Like, what flavor of religion? What are we talking about?
Well, for me personally, it was fundamental Baptist, pretty big into biblical counseling, like the Bible only for counseling, can't trust psychology, issues are related to sin in your life. And for my family, they're pretty Pentecostal, speaking in tongues, baptism of the Holy Spirit. My aunt thinks she's a prophetess and can speak for God, and the devil causes a lot of issues in your life, like headaches, and he'll talk to you and put doubts in your head about God, which that's happening.
So you get a headache, a tension headache or whatever, and it's not just a headache, it's Satan.
It is, yep.
squeezing your skull. The evil is attacking you, kind of deal.
Yes. Yes.
And you were totally bought into all this as a child, I'm guessing?
More so as an adult. Like, once I turned 18, that's when I went out to Bible college. And I didn't know a lot about the Bible because I didn't really study it. But I got sucked in. I love studying. And, yeah, I was into theology pretty big.
All right. So you and I are speaking now because you are no longer that person. Or you no longer hold to that belief system. You have rejected the religion.
Completely.
And that happened when and how?
It happened starting this January by talking to a coworker. And then I went on a search and I thought, oh, you know what? I love Answers in Genesis. I'll go watch the Bill Nye Kinham debate. And I watched it and I was listening to Bill's answers and I was like, wow, he has a lot of good points, a lot of proof. I need to keep digging. And the more I dug, the more I just saw that evolution held water, but not creationism. Like, there's no proof for it. Like, there are things that are older than 6,000 years. And my mind was blowing.
There's a website, a satirical website that said Sumerian civilization discovers Garden of Eden or something. I don't know. It's just one of those things where, you know, all of these things that predate the supposed young earth, the beginnings of the young earth are all around us, you know?
Correct. Yeah.
So I'm catching you right on the bubble here. I mean, you are freshly emerged and probably still kind of rattled from all this, right?
Yeah. 6 months. That's how long it's been.
So what's that like for you? I mean, where are you at? Are you looking around thinking, oh my God, how did I get here? Or are your friends and family know? I mean, what's going on?
Well, I feel really good. It took a while to kind of shake hell. And I remember watching a Richard Dawkins documentary on sex, death, and the meaning of life. And talking a lot about how guilt is a human device, you know, it's evolutionary. And I was just thinking, wow, that's what hell is. Hell's a guilt trap for not believing. And that was really freeing when I realized hell is nothing more than a scare tactic, because that was something I was debating. I'm like, if this is true, then I'll go to hell for rejecting it. And that was terrifying.
I follow Dawkins' work. Why have I not heard of this? Let's see. Sex, Death, and the Meaning of Life is a three-part television documentary exploring what reason and science might offer in major events of human lives. It's on Netflix, you say?
Yep.
Hang on. I'm going to put it on my watch list. I got to add it to my queue. I got all these, you know, I got my shows now. I'm watching Better Call Saul. I don't suppose you're watching The Handmaid's Tale, are you?
No. I did watch Better Call Saul, though. I love that show.
So The Handmaid's Tale is compelling and terrifying, especially for any of us who've ever feared theocratic control. I mean, it's essentially Saudi Arabia on crack.
Oh, boy. You know?
I find it very prescient. There's a lot of social commentary in it, and that's why many people in the atheist community and the atheist movement find themselves talking about The Handmaid's Tale. So, I mean, you may not be a Hulu subscriber, but if you get a chance when it releases elsewhere to Netflix or whatever, I would encourage you. I'm obviously, we're still in season one, but it's, you know, it talks about stripping the rights and the identities of women away. And doing so under this sort of umbrella of God's perfect will, God's divine plan, used for political reasons by men, powerful men. Mm-hmm. And it's just horrifying, you know. So anyway, I'm sorry to digress a little bit.
No, but that's okay.
Sex, Death, and the Meaning of Life. Talk to me about your life right now. Have you told friends?
Yeah.
Have you told mom and dad? What's going on?
Well, for 6 months, I've kind of kept it under wraps with my mom because technically I'm still a resident of this biblical counseling place, even though I do it by phone. They're in Indiana and I live in Iowa. It's been really hard to stick with it and every week agree. Yes, I've learned so much from the Beatitudes.
No, I'm not sure I understand. You're remotely counseling or being counseled?
Yes, I am remotely counseling. Yep.
Well, flesh this out as much as you're comfortable with.
I am.
You're undergoing counseling by the church?
It's not a church. It's a parachurch ministry called Vision of Hope. And I signed up for the ministry 2 years ago because I was really struggling with alcohol abuse and depression and cutting. And that's what they help women only from like 18 years old to 28. And you live there for quite a while. And then eventually you move out and you have to graduate out of the program and be ascribing to all of their graduation standards, like have a healthy biblical life in the church, be understanding salvation and sanctification, biblical growth, and all that jazz. And yeah, I've stuck with it because I was afraid to tell my mom for the past 6 months and kind of scared because I moved back home to help her after her knee surgery. So I'm living with her right now. And I was like, I have no other place to go. What if she kicks me out? And that was a huge fear. So only recently have I told her, and it's been horrible telling her.
Well, I want to talk about that. Let's go backwards for just a second.
Sure.
You struggled with depression. There was a time when you actually took a blade to your own skin.
Sure did.
What does that do? Is it about self-worth issues? Did you want to cause yourself pain?
It was about, I was a perfectionist. I think I still am. But it was definitely like, you failed, so this is a way to punish yourself. Like, because I wasn't good enough. I wasn't holding myself up to my standards. I wasn't as good as another person. And all my friends at the Bible college had no idea to help me, even though this church that it's associated with has a huge biblical counseling program, has counselors, and nobody knew how to help me. So they shipped me off. Basically, all my friends told me to go.
So are you concealing the wounds when you're spending time with family and friends?
Concealing the wounds, yeah. I had to.
And when they found out, or... Obviously, they found out, right? I mean, if you're in counseling for this.
Yeah, I had to tell them. I was living in Montana at the time, so they wouldn't have seen it, but my friends knew. And I didn't cut in a visible place, so it was pretty easy to hide, but, you know, people find out.
Yeah. Sarah, the counseling you're receiving is what? You need to get right with God?
Yeah. There's no counseling that can occur unless you're first saved. And I've spent basically 6 months in that program fighting them all the way. But I've done so much for my mom and because of my mom most of my life. And that's kind of what that program turned into. Like, I can't let her down again because I didn't graduate Bible college. I dropped out. I have to finish something for her. So that's why I stuck with the program, and it's been 2 years. And for 6 months, I absolutely hated it, and I didn't agree. And then something, probably, I call it brainwashing the whole program, but something just made me click, and I'm like, okay, yeah, this is starting to make sense. I'll obey it. I'll do what they say. And I became like a full-fledged believer in biblical counseling and following all their ways, like using the Bible only to solve your problems. And they love Philippians 4:8 about, you know, your thoughts, like think on what's true, pure, right, honorable. And it's all about controlling your thoughts and your desires and finding different idols that you worship. Like you worship control, you worship escape. It's all about your heart. And
you worship the self, right? Don't focus too much on you. You need to surrender. Yep.
Correct.
Okay, so if mom hears that you are no longer a God believer, given your history, does she see this as just another manifestation of depression and sort of a psychological trauma?
She sees it as me listening to Satan and doubting God, and that's what she's told me. And she's told me I just need to accept God's love. I just need to have faith like a child. And she says, you're always choosing the hard route, Sarah. And I said, I've doubted this for a long time, even when I was at this counseling program and even in Bible college. Like, there were huge seasons of doubt about God and how can this be true? But I was completely surrounded by Christians. And it's when you ask for help from your friends and you just get one worldview, and that's the Christian view, and it's what I was just immersed in. And been trying to talk to her about that.
If she's Pentecostal, she's a hell believer, right? Does she hold to a literal lake of fire?
Yes.
And are you going there in her eyes?
Yes. That's been very hard.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it a confrontation? Did you send her an email? Give me the temperature, the flavor of these exchanges.
I talked to her face-to-face about a week ago about it. I said, Mom, something I really need to tell you. For about 6 months, I've been really researching stuff on religion and God, and I've come to the conclusion that the Bible isn't the Word of God, that the Christian God isn't the God of the universe, and I think a lot of it is man-made. And I was trying to give her scientific evidence about the flood. I sent her a video from Aaron Raw that he did on the flood, on the and all this scientific stuff.
She probably took one look at Aaron and thought you had sent a video from the devil himself, right?
Probably.
As that imposing figure of his, you know.
He does.
Yeah. She wasn't listening, is what you're saying.
No, she won't listen. It has to be on faith, and there's no reason. And I said, Mom, I'm not going to shut off my brain, and I can't just take it on faith. Like, there's actual evidence for this stuff, and there's no evidence in the Bible for what it says about creation. And I was like, the more you think about it, it's really ridiculous to think a snake can talk too. And just trying to explain it logically and kindly, even though no matter what you say, it sounds horrible. You know, you can't really talk about somebody's beliefs that they hold so dear without hurting them in some way. So it's been a hard conversation.
You didn't set out to hurt your mom. You're just trying to be honest, right?
Right. Like, I want to let her into my life and for her to know me. I'm an only child. It's just her and me, because my dad's no longer living. So it's like, I want you to know what's going on, and this is it.
It's weird. I think they struggle. It's like my father is, mom not so much, but dad believes in a literal hell. I mean, he's convinced that hell is real, and he used to say to us, you know, hell is a real place. It was a warning that we need to not follow the evil one. Dad is convinced that we are now living in the end times and all of these things. And of course, he's horrified that his son is an atheist activist. And I think he must wrestle with the idea that, you know, he has to somehow deal with the God that is supposedly just and benevolent and wonderful and perfect, who is going to torture his son forever. Mm-hmm. And when we try to talk about those things, it's like he starts blinking, or at least is in his brain. If a brain can blink, you know, he just doesn't want to hear it. La, 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 la. You know, God is love. Yeah. God is love. God is also just. And I think to myself, what is just about cooking me for eternity? I don't understand. Yeah. And how can you love this God? And it strains our relationship. Do you fear losing the relationship with your mom, or?
No, I don't think that'll happen. I do think with her twin sister, though, that relationship's shot, because I keep getting text messages about how this is the Holy Father and this is not my aunt. This is the Father talking to me, and this is Satan's coming after me. So I think more her sisters, I'll lose relationship with than her.
Sarah, I don't want this to sound wrong. I hope you know my heart when I ask this, okay?
Okay.
But I mean, I'm in, like, there's a religious, it's a church and a quote unquote college in my town called Rhema Bible Training Center. You've heard of Rhema?
My aunt goes to a church who's led by a woman who's gone to Rhema.
Okay. Okay. Well, that makes perfect sense, because when you hear the language of people saying, well, I'm a prophet or a prophetess, I don't know how exactly to describe these people, Sarah. But it's like they, when you look in their eyes, they're not looking at you. They're looking kind of through you. It's a little freaky. It's almost like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, right? I mean, you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
They have this wispy sort of way of talking about things, and it occasionally gets a little creepy. For me, it just gets creepy.
It's scary.
And I don't know if you know, I think that churches like Rhema and others attract a certain kind of people. True story, since we have the time to talk, and I wanted to take plenty of time here with you, Sarah. No kid, back when I was in high school, I was in a band. I played in a Christian rock band, okay? And they were auditioning for a guitar player. And so what you did back then is you put out an ad. Don't laugh. You put an ad in the newspaper. Christian, local Christian rock band seeks guitar player. And we had a guy who answered the ad. Well, it turns out we met the guy and we heard his story. Now, I'm like 16. I don't know what I'm doing. Nobody knows what they're doing. Well, this guy lived in like freaking Iowa. And he heard, quote unquote, heard the call of God in his life. God told him to throw whatever few things he had in his car, drive all the way to Oklahoma, pull into the Rhema Bible Training Center parking lot, go knock on the door and ask to see then Reverend Kenneth Hagin, who is now deceased. But he just thought he was going to drive to Tulsa and go rap on the office door. And Reverend Hagin of this mega ministry was just going to let him in and he was going to go and be part of whatever it is he was supposed to be part of. And of course they turned him away at the door. he was that kind of guy. He's just wispy and he's not really grounded in reality. And there was just something kind of creepy about the dude. And I always think about him. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Does she have any actual prophecies about you? Are you supposed to become something or what?
No, I don't think I'm supposed to become something. I'm always listening to Satan. That's the problem. Satan's telling me these lies about myself. Like when I was depressed, it was always Satan telling me I'm not good enough and God doesn't love me. And right now Satan's telling me that God's not real and this is what they want me to believe. It's so convenient because the Bible, I think, gives way to that type of thinking. Like, if you don't have faith, it must be Satan. It's unfortunate that they can reason away from that crazy book. And
you've come a long way in 6 months, Sarah. I mean, that's pretty impressive. Well, the reason you reached out to me was what? I mean, what's on your mind specifically beyond all this? I know you're going through it with Mom, right?
Right. Well, I just know your background, and you kind of came from a fundamentalist background too. And I was like, man, I just feel pretty alone. And I didn't know if you had any advice or anything, because coming out to my family has been rough. And I did tell one of my cousins, and she's a Christian, and she was pretty accepting. And she's like, you know what? You're allowed free will. And I was like, wow, thank you so much. So I don't know. I just felt pretty alone and isolated, and I just was asking for advice.
Well, I can just tell you what I think, and you can take it or you can leave it totally, okay?
Okay.
I myself, I've got, you know, some relatives that stand in judgment and embarrassment and shame, and I've got some people on my family tree who are like the relative that you just mentioned, and they're like, you know, your life belongs to you, and we disagree, but we still love you, and let's hang out, and there's I don't feel an attitude of judgment or condescension when I'm in their presence. And we can just sort of be who we are. And I'm encouraged by that. But ultimately, I wouldn't have any expectation that you're going to convince your mother. You're not going to convince her, certainly on the facts, because I'm convinced that she simply has a greater desire to believe in God than she has to know the facts and know the evidence. So when you bring data, and I was guilty of this, I remember one conversation I had with a relative. I came in armed for battle. I thought, well, I'm the God killer today, man. I've got so much good information about, you know, the Bible being debunked, at least the Christian God, right? We know the Christian God isn't real. We know that this didn't happen. We know the flood geology, blah, blah, blah. And I was amazed at the fact that not only didn't they listen to me, there's a kind of shutting down that took place. It was weird. She was looking at me, but she was kind of nodding with this kind of pathetic smile, you know,
but she, I've seen it.
Yeah. I mean, she wasn't going to change her mind. In fact, by me coming after her sacred and cherished belief by saying essentially it's ridiculous, she doubled down, she built up, she reinforced the wall in her heart. And I'd like to go back and have that whole exchange done differently, because I'm actually probably partially responsible for the fact that she's even more adamant in her superstitious beliefs today than she was before, because now she's on the defensive, you know. I think ultimately your journey is going to have to be about you. And so if you come out to your mom and you talk to your mom about these things, what's the end goal? Is the end goal to try to change her mind? If that's the case, I would encourage you not to waste your time. That way, madness lies, okay? You will never convince her, and you will go and bang your head against the wall, okay?
Yeah, I'm starting. Yeah, I have no desire to convert her. I just want her to know me for who I am, because I'm tired of like trying to please her. And I think I've just gotten to that point of like, you know what, mom, this is me. And you just, we're going to be different. And I think I've struggled accepting that a lot. And it's like, I just want to have a relationship, even if we differ on something very large.
Yeah. Why can't we love each other and disagree on this one issue? I know it's hard when she believes in a literal hell. That makes it a lot stickier. But ultimately, do you think your mom would let someone guilt or shame her into thinking like they do? I mean, was she totally just decide she was going to give up her value system because someone else was pressuring her? I doubt she would, right?
Mm-mm. No, she would not.
And of course, she's expecting you to do the very thing that she would never do in her own life. You're simply trying to be true to yourself. And I think for me, in my own journey, and I hope for you, it never is about mom and dad, you need to become atheists or mom and dad, you need to alter the trajectory of your lives. For me, it's my life belongs to me. I have every right to pursue the evidence and pursue truth on my own terms. If God shows up tomorrow, you have a guarantee from me that I do honestly want to know that. Mm-hmm. If you believe that Jesus genuinely does answer prayer and you've prayed on my behalf, you have nothing to worry about. So everybody can just chill and let's all be adults. And if they can't observe boundaries, you know, if they decide that they're going to continue to inject negativity and guilt and shame and tell me I'm this and tell me I'm that, then I have every right to close the door and make room in my life for those who act like family is supposed to act. I hope it never comes to that with you and your mom. I hope she does observe boundaries. So,
yeah, I'm actually surprised she's not accepting of it, but it is really cool that she's still talking to me about it and wants to know what I'm thinking. So I'm encouraged by that.
You realize that if you are a happy person, I mean, I know that depression is, it's not a choice. I understand that there's the science of depression. It continues to expand every day. We're looking at body chemistry and different environmental factors. And I find it hugely destructive for people to be using superstitious ideas to deal with the very serious issue, medical issue of depression. I hope that you're looking or at least exploring the options of perhaps some science-based solutions for depression. Have you explored anything like that?
Not yet. I actually don't feel like I did before I went into the counseling program. I feel it's amazing.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. You feel better now? Or
I do. Okay. So it sounds ironic, but as I become less of a believer, I felt so much less guilt in my life.
Wow.
And that has helped immensely because I've always like felt like I could never do good enough for God. He never was okay with the way I thought about certain things or how I feel on certain issues. And he was always judging me. And it's like, wow, I feel so free right now because there's nobody condemning me. And it's crazy. I've never been happier.
I'll bet there are people right now listening to us speaking who are nodding their heads because all of the fear and the guilt and the shame and the restrictions and all of the jamming the square pegs into the round holes were the catalysts for their own, you know, for their own lack of joy and purpose and happiness. And, you know, it just wasn't fitting. Their skin wasn't fitting right, if that makes any sense, you know?
No, that makes sense.
By the way, if you could look through the radio right now, you would see me smiling to hear that you're doing so much better. I'm just so happy to hear that, Sarah.
No, yeah, everything, I'm really good. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Were you going to say something? Oh,
well, I was just thinking also with that, I know in the biblical counseling program, they're always talking about focusing on other people and loving them. And it was so coerced. And it's so different. It's to see that when I don't have to know that God's looking down on me and asking me to go out of my way to care for another person, that it makes it so much easier to interact with people. And I've found that to be a real joy too. Like, it's strange. I've come to care about people more now when I can just see that this is all we have in life. Like, I have to do what I can now. Like, praying won't do anything for them if something happened. Like, going and doing something for them will. And I just have so much more joy knowing that, even, and being able to interact with people differently, knowing that I'm not commanded to love my neighbor. Like, I'm just doing it because I really do care.
Well, your life, my hope is anyway, that your life will stand as a refutation in your mom's eyes of the lies that those who don't believe in God are joyless, sad, purposeless, rudderless, malcontents. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's my hope that as you live your life and she's sort of watching from the periphery, she's able to say, even if she doesn't really admit it verbally, she may be saying to herself, you know, Sarah's doing okay. She's messing with my categories, but she's actually living a wonderful life. And I think that's my hope. It's my hope that you'll have a wonderful life anyway. It looks like good things. I mean, do you have good things going on right now with you, Sarah?
Yeah, I do.
For anybody else I know who might be listening, who is wrestling with these types of things, I know recovering from religion and the Secular Therapy Project are providing options for people who are dealing with depression and other types of things who don't want to, you know, be accosted with this sort of superstitious quote unquote solution, but are looking for real world science-based solutions. And so that's certainly out there. You have any other final thoughts? Anything else on your mind, Sarah? I mean, what's life look like in the weeks, months, and years ahead for you, you think?
Well, right now I'm just working at the hospital as a housekeeper, and I'm saving up money to go back to school. I realized I just have a passion for learning, and I want to be able to go out there and maybe work. It sounds corny, but I love organization, and I just want to be a business manager at some nonprofit or something.
That's not crazy. I think, you know, find what you love and try to find a way to pay the bills doing it, right?
Right. So I'm just working on making more money right now and loving my mom while I'm here in my hometown.
Well, let me leave you with an encouragement that, you know, because there is no evidence of life 2.0, that there's no evidence that there's anything beyond this life here, that it's too short to live in somebody else's shadow. It's too short to live carrying somebody else's baggage. And I hope whatever the future holds for you, it is a life lived on your terms. It is a life lived honestly. It's a life filled with discovery, and it's just loaded with good stuff. Okay, Sarah?
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for talking to me. It's been a real joy.
You too.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.